Welcome to Into Africa. My name is Mvemba Pezo Dizolele. I'm a senior fellow and the director of the Africa program at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. This is a podcast where we talk everything Africa, politics, economics, security, and culture. Welcome. The East African community has recently admitted Somalia as its eighth and most recent member state, following a long wait period. Somalia's admission into the bloc aims to boost economic growth in the country. However, this decision has been met with sharp criticism from those who argue that Somalia's long history of conflict may lead to potential security challenges within the bloc. This statement is seemingly paradoxical, particularly considering that a majority of member states of the EAC are currently facing issues of insecurity and ongoing crises that threaten not only their own citizens, but also those of neighboring countries. The East African Community is a regional intergovernmental organization that comprises eight member states, namely Burundi, the Democratic Republic of Congo, Kenya, Rwanda, South Sudan, Uganda, Tanzania, and of course, the newly admitted Somalia. The establishment of this bloc dates back to 1967, but it collapsed 10 years later in 1977 due to various issues, including tensions between partner states. The bloc was later revived with the signing of the treaty on November 30th, 1999, which officially came into effect on July 7, 2000, following its ratification by the original three partner states, Kenya, Tanzania, and Uganda. The primary objective of the bloc is to widen and deepen economic, political, social, and cultural integration in order to improve the quality of life of the people of East Africa through increased competitiveness, value-added production, trade, and investment. His Excellency Salva Kiir Mayardit, the President of South Sudan, currently serves as the EAC Chairman. Some of the main achievements of the East Africa community include removal of visas and work permit fees for East Africans, use of ID and student cards as travel document, among others. However, there are still tensions among member states of the bloc, ranging from the disagreements between Uganda and Rwanda regarding border issues, to the territorial disputes that have arisen between Kenya and Uganda, to the conflict involving the M23 rebel group in DRC, that has pushed Rwanda and the Democratic Republic of Congo to the brink of war, with the DRC accusing Rwanda of supporting the group. Additionally, the relationship between Burundi and Rwanda is deteriorated due to allegations of Rwanda providing financial and training support to the Red Tabara group. This internal conflict could potentially threaten the stability of the bloc, and it calls into question the future of its existence. Joining me today to discuss the state of the East Africa community today is Pascal Kambale, a human rights lawyer who's based in Goma in Eastern DRC, and Beverly Ochiang, a non-resident senior associate with the Center for Strategic and International Studies, who's joining us from London in the United Kingdom. Beverly and Pascal, welcome to Into Africa.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Let's just get to it. EAC has made the news quite a bit lately, particularly about all these issues that I've just read on the top of this session here. What is the current situation? What is the state of affairs in EAC, speaking generally? Beverly, we'll start with you.
I think the EAC has continued to be quite a diverse organization. And as you noted, it includes countries stretching all the way from Kenya, going up to the north, you're now going to Somalia, and then going up further east, you're going all the way to DR Congo. And these are among the latest members of the bloc. But it doesn't mean it's a very united bloc. I think it's been trying to consolidate a variety of interests, whether they're economic, political, security, and each new member comes in with some weight of issues. So when DR Congo joined around about 2022, there was the concern about the security crisis in the east, but everyone was looking at the fact that this is a country with a very big population of nearly 100 million people. It would be a big market. It has minerals. There was a road that was being built between DRC and neighboring Uganda, and that would potentially increase or improve imports and exports between the countries. When Somalia joined, and that took a longer time because of the security situation, and I think from the lessons learned from previous conflicts within the region, was the community ready to take on an active conflict zone, an area that does display quite a bit of promise? Somalia has the longest stretch of the Indian Ocean, which would mean such an expansive port operation if there was stability in the country, given its long history of piracy and now the current insurgency of Al-Shabaab. But all of them coming in have always been about opportunity, support, and consolidating the region and trying to make it almost like a political and economic federation. And there were some discussions much, much earlier, pre-2010, of a possible federation and maybe even a single sovereign state or an economy, which has been difficult because this is a region that has different languages, different political ambitions, security contexts, social needs. But ultimately, there's been some mechanisms through which they can support each other. So the EAC will have certain committees, either for peace, for economy, which would then try to address grievances that tend to arise between member states, because sometimes you're neighbors and you have ethnic links, you may have political links, but sometimes those breed animosity, as what we're seeing with the case with Burundi, Rwanda, DR Congo, and Uganda, that has been probably the most prevalent flashpoint of political conflict among the members. But I think it's still fairly optimistic, considering the fact that it has managed to hold together for nearly three decades compared to the very quick collapse when it was initially founded in 67 and collapsed in 77. And there have been modifications to maybe its code of conduct. It could be in its mechanisms internally with addressing issues and conflict. And I think that's what has built its resilience. But in terms of political leadership, there's still quite a bit of work to be done, because that longstanding animosity seems to be handed down even when you do have elections, like in DRC, where Kabila changed over to Tshisekedi, or even here in Kenya, where now you have Ruto from Kenyatta. Those things are still passed along with the political leadership. And that's the issue that probably needs to be addressed the most.
Pascal, from where you stand, Beverly has laid out a couple points there. This was built with, in keeping in mind, opportunities, support, consolidating the region. You are sitting on the other side of it, of the EAC, the far reaches over there in Goma. How does the community look to you?
I think Beverly has said it all. I completely agree with her. I think it depends on how you see, on the perspective, on the how you look at the integration. EAC has always been about two things, as Beverly eloquently mentioned. One is economic opportunity perspective, and then the second one is political integration. I think both the expansion and the experience over the last couple of decades, one can argue that EAC has been quite successful in terms of providing economic opportunity to its partner states. Now we are talking about expanding railroads across a number of its member states, whether the Central Corridor, through the Central Corridor from Dar es Salaam to Kindu in eastern Congo via Burundi, the old railroad, the Kenya-Uganda railroad. Talks are now about revamping it and even expanding to extend to southern South Sudan. I think the market has expanded and has been strengthened. We are talking about cooperation in oil sectors, even though there are some, the road is still bumpy, as Uganda-Kenya recent problem showed. But still, the Department of Cooperation, the Ugandan Department of Regional Cooperation, earlier this week issued a report which showed that the share of East African community market of the export of Uganda has increased dramatically over the last couple of years. I think it's the same in other member states. Political integration-wise, I think we still have a lot of problems, as Beverly mentioned. As we expand, as the East African community expand and integrate new countries, DRC, South Sudan, and Somalia, so the problems in terms of security, in terms of political integration, also increase. So I will say relative success in terms of economic opportunity, but still a lot of problems in terms of political integration.
A lot of opportunities, but also a lot of political problems in terms of integration. In 1977, ATI was founded, it collapsed for a set of disagreement, I suppose, between the three founding members. Today, we know that different countries bring, I guess, different competitive advantages to the table, and also some of those issues that you may have mentioned. I'd like to spend a little more time on getting a sense of who's bringing what to the table and what are some of the challenges that we're facing today.
I suppose it would be important to start with the core members, Kenya, Uganda, and Tanzania. And I think in a previous discussion, we talked about hegemony and the fact that them being the founding members kind of pre-established that hegemony, that they would be the ones who would steer the politics and the vision of what the EAC is. And they are quite influential. I mean, Kenya has played quite a significant role with peace agreements, whether it's with the South Sudan situation and the revitalized peace agreement from 2018. And that's after it had gone through a civil war and after it had split from Sudan, which would have been a much more acrimonious process. Not that that was completely pacified. South Sudan is very much in crisis. They have an election coming this year. We're not even sure how that's going to happen, more than even if it'll happen. Then you have Tanzania, which has always been very inward looking, partly because of its socialist background and context. And in many instances, it rarely would comment on regional or international issues. It will work with international partners and regional partners. It is part of another regional bloc, the SADC, with Southern African countries. It's part of the trading bloc, COMESA. It does have quite significant port area. It's had fairly strong leadership, consistent leadership, even though there have been concerns about what that does to the internal politics of the country. And sometimes it can be a bit of a, not really a disruptor, but it does get into some antagonisms, particularly with Kenya, when it comes to trade, when it comes to how they relate with one another. And sometimes it's all in jest. Like recently, probably last year, the president, Samia Suluhu, was making fun of the dollar shortage in Kenya, which was a big economic issue. But for them, it gave them a reason to be smug. And then you would look at Uganda. And Uganda has always had an interesting role in the region. They played a big role in Somalia with peacekeeping, with fighting against the Al-Shabaab group. They're also currently and have historically played a role in DR Congo, the eastern region, partly because some of their former rebels or rebel groups that used to be based in Uganda then moved to DR Congo and have been active there and sometimes stoking unrest within the country in Kampala as recently as 2021. So for them, the security situation is very prevalent. But there's also been other long-standing interests in the minerals and the reserves there, which has led to some proxy wars within the region. But they're also allies with countries like Israel, with the US, and that also builds defense, that builds technology, and that builds trade. Then now you start to expand outwards to the members that started coming in from around 2007, that was Rwanda. It had recovered for quite some time from the genocide in 1994. It has had more or less the same leadership, so some level of stability in terms of its political leadership. It does bring in a population of nearly 14 million people. It has a fairly strong GDP. It has very strong international partners, particularly despite the fact that there are concerns about its human rights records. The US, the UK have put in quite a bit of investment, and it is growing as a hub that is hosting a lot of trade summits, technological summits, and sort of a competitor to Kenya, for instance, which has been always the home of many expatriate communities and many international organizations. Burundi as well joined around 2007, I believe, brings in about 12 million people. It's probably one of the most underdeveloped countries because of the long history of turbulence and violence. But at the same time, it does bring to the variety of the region because it has communities that are associated or have close links with Rwanda or even with Tanzania. It is, there's some ambitions, I think, particularly by Russia, to build a nuclear power plant there, which would be significant for energy in the region. Then you have the most recent members like DR Congo, big market. Everyone was harping on about the big number of population that is there and the mineral reserves in the east. You have Somalia now, which is a key, despite its insecurity, security partner to the region because the US has invested there. They are supporting neighboring countries with the counterinsurgency operations. And I think if it opens up and diversifies trade, then there could be some optimism of Somalia's stability beyond just the focus on the security situation. They have a wider market to look into the region and to be able to have closer collaboration that would then build its resilience.
Pascal, some of those issues, while they present opportunities, but we also see, you know, early on, I think Beverly had referred to ethnic links between different countries that should, in principle, be sources of consolidation. But we see they're breeding much more contention in the case of Rwanda, Burundi, in the case of Rwanda and DRC, and even Rwanda and Uganda. So when we talk about the rise of hegemons, regional organizations work better when there are some hegemon, and that is very clear who the hegemon is. In this case, just to listen to Beverly, it sounds to me there is a sort of a crisis of hegemon. It's not very clear who is the hegemon if there's such country that can claim that mantle.
That's right, and Beverly is absolutely right. The East African community is different from the other regional community in that way. And the consequence is that nobody wants to admit what their place is within the community. In other communities, I mean, everybody knows their place. We know who the big brother or the big sister is. You know who the middle tier of powerful member states are. Everybody keeps their place, although the competition is still playing out. For very long, for instance, take the ECOWAS, for very long, almost 10 years, the big brother Nigeria was almost dormant, did not show the kind of aggressive leadership they used to show. But nevertheless, everybody knew that was temporary and one day or another, Nigeria will wake up again and show leadership, which is happening now. I think the East African community is different. The competition is not among people, among state parties that know, each knows where they stand. The competition is about who will take the leadership over the others. I mean, for very long, Kenya was the economic powerhouse. Tanzania was provided some kind of ideological and diplomatic leadership of some sort. And the Uganda, just to take the three original founding members, Uganda had a powerful militaristic security kind of influence in the region. That is no longer the case. Economic-wise, Kenya is still powerful, but I think it is fair to say other countries, including Tanzania, even Uganda, are biting to this economic influence that Kenya used to have for very long. In the region, even before DRC joined the club, it was the lone malad in the region. I think in the mining sector, in political and democratic development, DRC is coming back to the fold, is showing some incredible diplomatic comeback in the region, even beyond the East African community, Burundi as well. I think that's the biggest problem the East African community faces now. There is no clear leadership, no hegemon. Nobody wants to acknowledge their place and keep it until we resolve that. My theory is that this expansion exercise is a way of resolving it without saying it. I think individual member states bringing some client states in the club in a way to shore up their own influence, internal influence. We don't know yet. It's not clear yet how blocks will form. In ECOWAS, for instance, we know where the blocks are. the two big Francophone countries in the ECOWAS, Ivory Coast and Senegal, have always formed a tandem, a very solid tandem. We know that the two big Anglophone countries, Ghana and Nigeria, has always worked in tandem. Everybody else kind of gravitate around these two blocs. So things are quite clear in ECOWAS. I think things are not clear yet in the East African community, and I think we still need some time for those blocs to form and divisions to be clearly made among different blocs.
Staying with you a little bit there, Pascal, when you say client state, you referred to this a few moments ago. Who is leading who as far as those maybe emerging blocs, sub-blocs? I mean, we're talking about EAC bloc, and what you're saying, there's some dynamics there whereby some countries are playing big brothers or big sisters to other countries. Can you flesh that out a little bit?
I think it's quite clear in my view that you have a bloc forming around Tanzania, Burundi, and DRC. I think this trio is developing into some kind of a bloc. It's not very consolidated, very well consolidated yet. One can see something around that. Before the 22 elections in Kenya, there was some kind of axis between Nairobi and Kinshasa that it was quite clear. It's no longer there anymore. It is kind of disappearing. And I think the setback of the East African Community Regional Force was either a trigger or a consequence of that failing alliance between Nairobi and Kinshasa. Uganda and Rwanda have a very, very strange, I think the most mysterious relations in the region are between Uganda and Rwanda. But still, these two countries have their way of developing some kind of understanding. But clearly, Uganda and South Sudan are consolidating as a bloc. Maybe, I'm not sure to what extent, I'm sure Beverly will have more insight, to what extent Somalia and Kenya could eventually develop as a bloc. I know they have some disputes. At the same time, they have some common ground around the fight against terrorism, Al-Shabaab, etc. I don't know to what extent this could form a bloc or whether one of them will, each one will join other pre-existing blocs. But this is how I see this bloc morphing. It is not clear yet. It's not solid yet. I think the axis, the Dodoma, Kinshasa and Burundi, that for me is more solid for now.
Beverly, if you can pick up on that, one thing I want you to stress on is, you know, when we talk about hegemon or countries, we cannot dismiss the role of the leaders. There is strong personalities emerging, whether it's in Kenya, whether it's in Uganda, President Mahmoud in Somalia, Tshisekedi in DRC. But if we were to look at Rwanda, Rwanda has obviously Paul Kagame, president. You referred to Rwanda earlier. Rwanda sees itself as an hegemon of sort. How do they fit in this, particularly when we talk about these ethnic links? It's very interesting because Rwanda will say they're getting involved in DRC because of Rwandophone, particularly Tutsis. But then they have a problem with the same groups of people in Burundi and in Uganda. At the same time, this is really shaking the very understanding of trans-border citizenship, ethnicity, and so on. But then also, if you can address just the larger dynamics between these various personalities who are leaders in this community.
Yeah, I think it makes it very complicated because Rwanda would see itself as a hegemon because it's had the same leadership for the better part of the last two decades. And it seemed to be a strong leadership, both militarily and politically, and influential in the region. But one of the issues has been that Rwanda has often come up as the one that is responsible, allegedly, for the resurgence of the Burundi rebel group Red Tabara, for instance, or even the M23 resurgence in late 2021. And in some instances, that disruption between Uganda and Rwanda that happened around 2019, 2020. And the ramifications of that was that there's still a sense of mistrust among the leadership between or among those countries. And that becomes a problem when you want to exert influence. You could exert influence outside. So Rwanda is now involved in a completely new frontier, which is northern Mozambique, not a member of the East African community, but very close enough to the region that its security crisis is a cause of alarm for Tanzania, is a cause of alarm for Kenya, is a cause of alarm for Somalia, because the group there is referred to as Al-Shabaab, despite not being that. But without getting away from it, the good thing is that when you have a leadership that has certain connections, either politically or ethnically, it means that they can speak to a wider group of constituents. In theory, it means that they can present a united front. It means that they can negotiate agreements that would be beneficial, not just for their own country, but for the wider sub-regional community. And that sometimes it is important to have a leadership that is able to have that kind of regional appeal. But that also might sit uncomfortably with leaders who might be from a different community, as is the case with Burundi, or as is the case with Uganda. And then you might have, because, you know, ethnic issues also affect Kenya more internally than even regionally, because Kenya's issues with neighboring countries have nothing. Well, with Somalia, it's different, but with other countries like Tanzania or Uganda, it's nothing to do with ethnicity. With the Somalia issue, it's quite complicated because there's areas that have historically been contested by the Somali community. And even lately, when there was a tussle between Somalia and Ethiopia, there were lots of people sharing maps of what Somalia ought to have been, which would have consolidated quite a significant part of Kenya and quite a significant part of Ethiopia, which is also not an EAC member, but is within close proximity and is a key partner to the region because of the African Union and other things. And you would imagine that because they have the same ambition, Kenya and Somalia, to fight against Al-Shabaab, because that would be beneficial to the whole region and open up an entire market, there's also mistrust on the basis of that. Because right after some of the attacks that took place here in Kenya in 2013 in Westgate, and then there was after that the attack in Garissa, then there was the attack at the Dusit Hotel in Nairobi, there was some animosity, and sometimes it was even unsaid, against the Somali community. There was a point around 2014 where there was a roundup of people from the Somali community in certain parts of Nairobi. And that has also sometimes fed into the tensions between the two countries. Despite that ambition to fight against Al-Shabaab, there have been flights being suspended for a long period of time because maybe Kenya said something wrong about Somalia or the self-declared Republic of Somaliland, or because of allegations of discrimination. And sometimes even the Al-Shabaab group will use that to try to show Kenya as the enemy. And the leadership, the political legitimate leadership, has to be able to look past that and to be able to fight against that to ensure that those common market security political interests are still met. The situation of the Great Lakes is a lot more dicey. It's been very difficult to resolve because even when international partners take a stance, we've seen France speak against Rwanda's alleged support of M23. The US has done the same, but that's only led to their vilification in DR Congo rather than a partnership, which you would imagine, especially with the UN peacekeeping force leaving, you need to consolidate that Western/regional partnership to protect the region. That hostility can be very difficult. And I suppose Tshisekedi of DR Congo finds himself under pressure at a very local level to respond to that sentiment, to issue strong statements against Rwanda. And then you see that allegiance between himself and the Burundi leader. And now Rwanda has been perceived as the problem child of the region, despite its strong Western alliances, despite the fact that it could be influential, because that is all seen in the lens of what are the other interests that Kagame is allegedly purported to have in the eastern regions through those proxy wars that have been playing out for longer, for probably as long as the existence of the EAC itself?
There are issues there, Beverly, two issues that you mentioned. You didn't call them that. One is irredentism, really. Somalis claiming Greater Somalia, claiming parts of Kenya, claiming part of Ethiopia as a larger part. There is also irredentism in the part of Kigali, literally claiming that part of DRC belongs to Kigali, meaning I've been part of Rwanda and so on, and encroaching on, you know, citizens of a country, a citizen of that country. So the responsibility, obviously, if every single country that has communities, ethnic community across border, will get involved across border, and there won't be any peace anywhere in Africa, right? Because we know every country faced this thing, right? You have Zambian Bembas were on both sides of Angola and Zambia and DRC, Angola similar, Rwanda itself, Burundi, Uganda, and so on. So if every other country will get involved because they felt like they can in such country were molested, whatever the issue was, it's just not going to work. So Pascal, where you sit, how do you see this issue of irredentism flashing even more on one level? But also I want you to address the issue of countries that belong to other communities. So the DRC, for instance, is obviously part of SADC. Tanzania is part of SADC. Somalia is in IGAD. How those pressures from those various communities also come to bear in the future or the shaping up of EAC?
The interesting thing is that Rwanda, before it joined the East African community, actually asked to join SADC. I believe it was in 99 or 2000. That's very interesting. And now there are talks about Burundi wanting to join SADC. SADC and EAC are not particular a singularity on this. In ECOWAS, there are members that are both party to ECOWAS and the common monetary, that French Francophone grouping. I think countries, particular countries, join different economic regional groupings depending on what are the perceived benefits. For Tanzania, for instance, clearly they see themselves more part of SADC when it comes to common ideological and security issues. Security-wise, I think Tanzania is more invested in SADC because of the Mozambique terrorist groups, for instance, because of the history of frontline countries against apartheid, etc., etc., but also ideologically. Most members of SADC are the ruling class of these countries are former liberation movement, so is Chama Chama Pinduzi, etc. I think they think of themselves as more invested in East African community for economic reasons, more for economic reasons. I suspect DRC is the same. They tend to turn to SADC for security reasons, and at the same time, they think they have more economic interest in the East African community. So, yeah, for me, it's not Somalia is the same. I mean, Somalia is a Horn member and therefore is very well part of the equation. But at the same time, they want to expand their economic opportunities with the East African community. There is no contradiction there as far as I'm concerned.
The issue of irredentism, how does that affect the relations within this community, East Africa community?
Well, that's a part of the reality in Africa. I mean, African countries, since 1960, since the independence era, they have dragged each other before the International Court of Justice. I think the ICJ has heard cases of border disputes, etc., more coming from Africa than coming from any other part of the world. The way borders were, that's for me, that's not a problem. The problem is when individual leaders insist on that. Since the, I would say, two decades or more than two decades, Rwanda has been a particular problem in that. Not just with Uganda, not just with DRC. It has been accused of waging a coup d'etat in 2015 in Burundi. And it's now harboring, according to Burundi, the rebellion that was launched following that coup d'etat. For me, that's not a problem. We have had, at some point, at the same time, one brother who was vice president in Uganda, his big brother, was at the same time a minister of, I believe, foreign affairs in Kenya. The same family, same mother, same father. That was not a problem between Uganda and Rwanda. The same with Zambia and the DRC. It's not uncommon that families are split between the two countries. Sometimes individual members of the same family hold a senior position in government across the border. But nobody in Zambia suspects Congo of wanting to expand its territory toward Zambia or vice versa. So I think the only issue is Rwanda. Rwanda has had, it has a strong leadership, as Beverly said, but at the same time, it's the only country that has had problems over the last decade with almost everybody else in the East African community, maybe with the only exception of Kenya.
Speaking of that then, considering all these dynamics that we've spent the last few minutes dissecting, Beverly, where is the EAC going in the few minutes that we have left?
Well, I think they want to ride on a wave of some optimism because they've had new members, members that have conflicted histories, that have a lot of baggage, but also that expand the region and diversify it. So having a big Somali community as part of the EAC is really representative because it's a community that is present in some parts of the region. Having DRC, which is arguably the largest country in the region, as part of the EAC is also part of that increasing diversity. And expanding those economic interests so that it has, by value, a very strong GDP. I mean, at the moment, I think the region, ECOWAS, is probably the biggest one. And it's always been one of the most powerful ones. And also just making sure that some of those alliances that naturally come together, even during periods of conflict, like the Great Lakes or the Horn of Africa, are put in one particular block where they can speak in one voice. I think the trouble is being able to just solidify the leadership and being able to hold one another to account. Currently, even though we have that rotational leadership, despite all the conversation about having a hegemony and having a strong power, that rotational leadership means that each and one of the leaders of the EAC country member states is a stakeholder, a true stakeholder to the politics and the social and economic dynamics of the region. How much that trickles down is another issue altogether, because if you can't deal with the internal wrangles, if there's a lack of objectivity, then that collapses altogether. Holding each other to account goes back to where there are allegations of atrocities, where there are allegations of human rights concerns, where there are allegations of civil unrest, where you are concerned about whether there will be a transition or a democratic transition, whether there's representation in respective governments. And that balance between sovereignty, but also all of us are beholden to the same ethos and values, how to navigate that will constantly evolve. But I think given that it's held for this long, it's still in a good place. And I think it'll still continue to try to be in a good place.
Pascal Kambale, 30 seconds. Where is the EAC going?
I think we are in a crisis period now, a crisis of transition. EAC has never quite experienced this kind of crisis of transition between a relatively peaceful regional grouping to a grouping that will face political upheaval, political disputes among its members. This has been experienced for very, very long in other regional communities like ECOWAS, etc. For EAC, it's the first time, the very, very first time that they have to implement collective security architecture. The architecture was there. Protocols providing for collective security were there, but they had never been used before. It's the very first time in the crisis of DRC, Eastern DRC, that they have to use it. And I suspect they will have to use it even more often. I think that the current crisis stems from that. And until they figure out how to do this, they have never done it before. I think that crisis will still be there. One can count on the collective wisdom, as Beverly said. I saw that the crisis of the East African Community Regional Force in Eastern DRC sounded wake-up call. I see now the chairman, Salva Kiir, is now touring the region. He was in Kigali earlier this week, and then he was in Burundi, I believe. He's expected to come to Kinshasa. That is the kind of shuttle diplomacy that EAC was not accustomed to. They will learn in this crisis. One can hope that they will be able to master the collective wisdom to be able to overcome this crisis. But there's no denial that there is a very deep crisis, which for me is a crisis of transition from one type of regional community to another.
On that note, transition from one type of regional community to another, I think the size will bring will also increase the size and nature of the issues that the community will face. I would like to thank Beverly Ocheng and Pascal Kambale for joining us today. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. We want to have more conversations about Africa. Tell your friends. Subscribe to our podcast at Apple Podcasts. You can also read our analysis and report at csis.org/Africa. So long.